There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Drive Live talks education.
And we have three with us in the studio this afternoon. First of all, let me introduce Carissa Valentin from Dutoit. Sorry about that, I got that wrong.
From South Africa.
From South Africa. So there you go. Centre manager at Hummingbird Preschool, DIFC branch. You have a number of branches. Jenny Mullen is here from Which School Advisor. She is the early years editor. Nice to see you, Jen.
Hello, thank you.
And also Fiona Cottam, chief academic officer, principal at Heartland International School. Nice to see you.
Afternoon, thank you.
Welcome back. It's been a while. So let's start with the news today. A Dubai school implements a no homework rule is one story that we were all kind of mulling over during the course of this week. I'm going to start with you, Fiona. Is that a good thing? Should kids not be getting any homework at all?
I mean, I have to say at Heartland, we have a policy in the primary section of the school. We pretty much have a no homework policy. We do encourage parents to work with children at home in terms of reading. We think that's the real key to success, reading to children and getting children to read aloud to them. We think there's also an argument for a mental arithmetic because it pulls in a routine and a rigour and a system to them. But really, other than children who get up towards year six, where you might have some project-based work, we really have a no-homework policy. It's something that was quite alien to me, coming from a secondary background, where you have this expectation of homework happening. But actually, as long as children are learning all day long and throughout the day, to reinforce the learning at home, you have that over the dinner table in discussions. You have it in the car on the way home. What did you learn today? And you have that type of conversation. But homework, we don't believe in it.
And Fiona, what's the response been from parents? Obviously, you know, if they maybe have come to Heartland new and they are sort of thinking, well, my child's not getting any homework, does this mean the teachers don't care about the children?
I think it's mixed. There will always be some parents who maybe because of their personal preferences or their experiences themselves, or indeed, you know, the conversations that they have with their friends socially about what their children do. There might be some, but I think that we try and explain it to parents in such a way that they understand that sometimes conversations about learning are far more powerful, and certainly reading with your child, it really is the key to success. So we take a stand. We've never come into a significant argument with any parents, but I can understand, particularly with older children in the primary phase, why they might sort of question it. And I think we can facilitate that by encouraging home learning that they choose to do themselves. But we've kept our policy in place.
It's a hard one, this, because I suppose lots of, you said just now, NLT, lots of parents demand homework, expect to see their kids going above and beyond, excelling, I guess. It's a little bit unfair to bring you two guys, Carissa, and also you, Jenny, into this. But, I mean, you have obviously children, Jenny, and this is part of something, I suppose, that you're dealing with. But I have a daughter who is at 11 at one school, seems to get an enormous amount of homework. One piece I tried to help her with yesterday stressed me out no end because I had to draw a map. And I understood why she was stressed with it. And my son on the other end doesn't seem to get as much. I'm trying to come to terms with how much you should get, when you should get it. And they're very different ages. I don't know if there's a norm.
Yeah, and I mean, I look back to when I would come home from school as a child, and you'd come home, you'd have a bag of crisps and you'd go out on your bike, and that was what you did for the afternoon. And that's really, crisps aside, that's kind of the childhood that I want my children to have. I want them, and I think it's really valuable. We're just talking off air about the kind of relationships that children have are so important. We keep, you know, every article I read about education is about developing soft skills and negotiation skills. They are not learned from sitting and making a polar habitat with some glitter glue with your mom, who's probably doing most of it. They are from going out and playing with your mates down the street. That is, it's true. You have a fight, you work it out by yourself.
Have you done a polar habitat recently?
Yeah, do I sound a bit bitter about polar habitat?
Seems to have irked you somewhat, I must say. And what flavour crisps, by the way, be your choice?
Salt and vinegar all the way.
Salt and vinegar, I thought so. Carissa, not about chips. What do you think about the homework situation?
It's surprising because a lot of parents will come into a nursery element and actually ask us, why am I not getting homework? Do we need to do homework? And these are children who are under the age of 4 years old. They're 2 years old, 2.5 years old. And they're parents who are asking about homework. And the whole philosophy should be they should be having fun. They should be learning through what they're doing outside, inside, making a mess. That's the sort of thing that encourages learning.
A parent of a 3 or 4 year old child is expecting you to send them home with, do what? What kind of a worksheet could a child at that age do?
Quite possibly start writing music. You never know.
We did have somebody in here once who said that we're going to have them as musicians, and we all kind of went, I'm not sure that's going to happen at five, but there you are. It was a while ago.
I mean, I have to say, I remember doing a project with my son when he was in primary school where he had to make a model of a rainforest. And I have to say, I was more competitive about it because actually it was me that made the model of the rainforest. And I remember when he brought it into school, I was very proud of my work. But some of the parents must have spent weeks on their projects and hired people to make them because they looked professional. I wonder sometimes, what did he gain from that? We obviously bonded and I guess the relationship improved. But what did he learn from that other than I knew how to cut the things out perfectly because I wanted it to look so good to make him feel good when he went to school?
Yeah, or did the relationship improve? Or was he like, my mum's not letting me do anything?
You're absolutely right, probably.
Sharjah have just made a very sensible ruling that they've actually banned these expensive pieces of homework. So. I did hop down to Creative Minds. Maybe I shouldn't say the name of the shop, but I ended up buying, you know, an Arctic wolf and a polar bear or something to go in. And I got to the checkout and I thought, oh, because, Lord, you know, what on earth am I doing spending this money on something that, you know, he's not that interested in.
But it's hard, though, because, of course, I don't have children, so I can't speak from experience. But I remember, you know, when I was younger, of course, we had projects to do of varying levels of skill and success. And I quite liked being creative. And my mum was a teacher and she didn't really have the time to spend doing stuff because she was too busy doing her own work. But I think it becomes competitive for the parents. You know, it's just like anything else. It's like a cake sale or a fair. There's that pressure that then comes on the parents that maybe the children just don't care, but the parents are really being put under the pressure.
I think there's an element of, with my daughter, made a cake to illustrate the structure of a cell about 6 weeks ago. And she did all the baking, she did all the bits, and but I kind of directed everything. But I feel like it was more for me to be reminded of that, you know, molecular level biology, whatever it was she was doing, and she was kind of teaching me. I figure that's what the relationship was about. It was take it home, tell your dad, because he's not really as smart as he thinks he is. It was maybe that, I'm not sure. That's one part of Drive Life Talks Education today, the no homework rule. We've covered that. It's not okay to name and shame students over non-payment of school fees. There's something that has been in the news over the last week or two. And over the weekend, teacher exams, news story, you've probably seen this, 5,000 teachers taking tests for the newly introduced UAE teacher license. We'll cover that in a moment. Three guests with us this afternoon.
Drive Live Talks Education.
They are Jenny Mullen from Which School Advisor, Chris Valentin from Dutoit, which is Hummingbird Preschool, DIFC, and Fiona Cottam is from Heartland International. Here's the second piece of news this week that people have been talking about. It's a difficult one, this, because at the moment, you know, sometimes parents have trouble paying fees. You have to approach this carefully. There are, of course, the serial offenders who will just push it as far as they can, I suppose. I don't mean to start with you every time, Fiona, but I suppose it's a hard one. But it isn't okay to name and shame students if mum and dad don't pay the fees, is it?
Absolutely not. I think internally staff may be aware for a variety of different reasons, but in terms of that child having any understanding of what's going on outside their realms and what's happening with their parents, my discussions on school fees are always with parents, never with children. It's as simple as that.
Okay, Carissa, I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? You get parents who will delay, and I suppose sometimes that's through financial difficulties, sometimes it's just because the nature of who they are, but taking it out on the child isn't the thing to do.
No, definitely not. I'd say this is more personal opinion, but a teacher has got a lot of impact on a child, and saying something to that extent to them could impact them quite physically and emotionally. Mm. So it would make, I'd say, them really embarrassed, and they'd struggle to go back to school.
Mm. Jenny, what about you? What do you think about that?
I'm just horrified at the concept. It's against the law. If you were an older child and you remember that, that's the kind of thing that stays with you for such a long time. And
it's the stigma attached, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Children.
And then imagine your parents then recover from that financial moment, and you've got to then be back in class with your classmates. You've got that attached to you. No, it's deeply wrong.
I think as well, it's not really, if the parents are having financial difficulties, naming and shaming the child isn't going to improve the situation. So it's not an action that can make the whole thing better. If anything, it's going to add more pressure to people clearly in a pressurised situation already. It's quite scary. I mean, things like my dad came into school to pick me up one day and he knocked over a tray of something, and that was mortifying to me for years. I mean, I still remember that now. He knocked over the milkshakes and we were having a story at the end of school, it's primary school, and I can remember that. So if it's financial related, I just wonder how.
What do you do in a situation like that? Do you clear it up, or do you? Well, I don't even know how that works. I don't know what the protocol is for something like
that. Well, when my dad knocked the milk drink over, I think a lot of people fussed, and I was like, first of all, that means no one gets to drink it. It was dead tasty. Second of all, it had to be my dad embarrassing me. So yeah, that was. I think I was maybe 5 or 6, and I remember that still so clearly. So can you imagine being 13? Something like that, and having your peers know that your parents were having financial difficulties.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It is a lasting impression. That's a story this week, so a round of absolutely not. Final story, I just wanted to bring this up with each of you in turn. Teacher exams, much talked about. It's something that all teachers are going to have to do. We've got something like, I was looking at the stats earlier on, 71,000 educational professionals in one way or another in this country. Those are ministry figures. And there were teachers taking tests on Saturday. A number of countries. So Cycle 3, Arabic, English, Maths, Physics, Chemistry and Biology, public and private high schools. This is the schools that follow the Ministry of Education curriculum. It goes down to other private schools in a while. But we're going to see that. It is a three strikes and you're out, I think, approach to that. But let me start with you, Fiona, on this. I mean, you're obviously gearing up to this. It is KHDA. They want this to happen by, I think it's 2021, isn't it?
They do, and we've submitted the names of our staff that we think are in the right place to do those exams. We're starting with the core subjects. It is English, Maths, Science, Arabic and Islamic Education. That's the requirement. To be honest, in an international school, we probably won't face as many challenges with our teachers through those assessments as some other schools may do. I can understand why KHDA and the government feel that they need to bring in some legislation, but I also feel confident that because we carry out best practice in terms of recruitment and retention of staff, in terms of following the best practices globally in terms of how we recruit our teachers with the right qualifications, that it's not something my staff or I are fearful of. But I do think it'll add another layer of transparency, particularly in some schools where it might be needed in terms of regulation.
You do sort of get the feeling that in some ways there is a little bit of weeding out that needs to happen in some schools. And I don't want to point at anybody in particular,
perhaps.
But there are different levels in different schools. And what the KHDA is trying to do is to bring all the schools up to a similar level. Just a story that's doing the rounds. Let's move on to our main story this week. And it is this. Here's your headline for you. I like this, you know. Schools getting tough targeting preschoolers. You've written this.
I have.
Jenny. just run us through the article. This is on the website, the Which School Advisor website.
So this has been born out of a discussion with nursery managers. And what I've heard on the grapevine, on the early years grapevine, is that over the course of term two is usually when children are going into schools for either their FS1, FS2 assessments. And particularly for children looking at going into FS2, they are going through it depends on the school, but they're going through a something of an assessment. And usually that's been the only hurdle. What parents are being told in some instances now, and we've had a lot of different nurseries come and report this to us, is that, sorry, the assessment is not the only thing. You need to come and enrol your child for term 3 of FS1, because without completing that term, they will not be academically ready to join us in FS2.
Which
we are talking about very young children here.
Sure, and in my experience of two kids, that's just nonsense.
Yeah.
There's just absolutely no reason for that.
I mean,
is there any basis for that? Sounds like rubbish to me.
It's the only... again, to my mind, the only basis that there can be is one that's the school enrolments department are, you know, it's the pressure from the marketing teams, from the enrolments departments. This is not about children.
Okay. Chris, let me ask you about that then. It seems as though we've got lots of schools in Dubai now. There is a lot of choice, which means there is also a lot of competition between schools. What would you say?
I totally agree. It's something I see on a constant basis, having an earlier centre. On average, I lose about 20 children to schools every year because that is what they're being told, that if you don't come to us, you're not going to get the position if you're not enrolled in FS1, or that your child might not be ready in terms of the curriculum, so they need to enroll earlier so that they can be caught up when these children are too young to be caught up.
And you can understand, as a parent, I imagine you hear those words and you think, oh my goodness, I didn't know I needed to do this. I'm going to have to act. You know, I really need to make sure I get that place. I know this is a school I want. I've chosen this school and I really want to get my child in there. And if I don't do this, I will lose out. Even if they are comfortable and happy in the nursery that they're currently in, they still feel this need and this panic to listen to that advice.
Exactly. I had one of my students who'd been with us since she was a baby, 3 months old, leave us mid FS1 because that exact same thing happened, that the mom was absolutely terrified that she wasn't going to get the position at the school she had chosen because of them not having the position later on that year.
Okay, so the situation is here. The KHDA recently changed how it works, Jenny, I believe. So the earliest school starting age is as young as 2 years, 8 months in FS1. Mm-hmm. If a parent...
And the school agree.
The school agrees. So if you think, my child's ready for that, and some children are, some children aren't, that's
absolutely
fine.
Absolutely, and that is why this has to come from the parent. This has to come out of the needs and the developmental stage that the child is at. This cannot be subject to pressure from any external source. This really can't.
Okay. Okay. We're going to talk to Lavetta in a second, who decided to do exactly what we've been talking about. And she decided to herself, look, nursery fees, FS1, FS2, school fees, pretty much the same these days. So I decided to make the move. That's next.
This is Drive Live. Get in touch with the show.
Text us on 4001.
It's Drive Live. It's Drive Live Talks Education. Three guests. Jenny Mullen from Which School Advisor. Jenny is the early years editor. We're talking about an article that Jenny has written. It's on the website. Chris Valentim from Dutoit, Centre Manager, Hummingbird Preschool at DIFC. And Fiona Cottam, Chief Academic Officer and the Principal of Heartland International School. Chris and Fiona, you have a relationship, a feeder relationship, if you like. That came out wrong. Let me start again. The nursery would feed into the school. You know what I'm trying to say. And we'll talk about that in a moment. Here's the headline. Schools getting tough targeting preschoolers. Nurseries in Dubai complaining about tactics that some schools use. Essentially scaring parents into making a switch, Jenny. That's fair to say.
Yeah.
That's what we were talking about a moment ago. But what should a nursery be doing for a child? What should the...
Yeah, and I think this is actually any parents who are listening and they're experiencing this pressure, go and equip yourself with some knowledge about early years curriculums. Because I can tell you for now, the most popular early years curriculums in Dubai, they are not teaching your children algebra. You know, probably the most popular early years curriculum in Dubai is the early years foundation stage out of England. And that has seven areas of learning. Three prime areas, which are pretty much the central
focus
absolutely of children's days, and they are their personal, social and emotional growth, their physical development and communication and language. These are the three key things that any good early years setting should be working with your children on. And so for a school to be saying this child is not academically ready to join our FS2 department is an utter nonsense.
Okay.
It really is.
Carissa, that's obviously you're nodding in agreement there.
Yeah. The three prime areas is the areas that you concentrate on for young children, because essentially you need to look at, are they able to be resilient enough? Are they able to explore on their own? Are they able to be physically ready to take on different things and begin to communicate with each other versus going in and doing mathematics or starting to write? It's about the fun. It's not about the hardcore learning.
And Fiona, I mean, obviously, as Jenny said, educate yourself, arm yourself with the information to be confident in your decision. But as a parent, you come under a lot of pressure. If you have someone who is saying, I am a teacher at school, I'm telling you, you need to move your child out of nursery or they're going to suffer. It's really hard to push back against that.
I mean, the only way to describe that is unethical behaviour, if I'm being really honest. The work that the nurseries do is phenomenal, and they have a crucial role to play in the development of children. Some parents choose not to send their children to nursery. Mm. Some children decide to put their children straight into school at FS1. And I think I go back to what Jenny said. It's about parental choice, parents making the right decisions for their children. And certainly I think if parents feel that they're being put under pressure and being told by a school that their child needs to come to a school setting urgently or else they'll fail and they won't be successful, I think go and talk to another school. Go and take advice somewhere else, because that isn't the way that we want to operate. When we talk about having a partnership with nurseries such as Hummingbird, we have the highest of respect for the work that they do. There's no deal under the table. There's no financial incentive. There's no sort of promise or guarantee of anything. But what we're doing is we're recognising professional conduct and professional experience and expertise within the region. And Hummingbird are happy to say, you know, when the children are finished with us or at the right point in time for that child, here are some of the many schools that we recommend, not just Heartland, but many other schools that they work in partnership with. And we're confident that your children will be successful in those settings. So we feel ethically comfortable with those types of partnerships with nurseries.
It's all about the teamwork.
Yeah,
really.
It is. It's absolutely about how we collaborate, how we share best practice, and how we ensure that schools and nurseries and families are making the right and the best decisions for children and for children's individualism and their welfare.
Okay, so one of the things that you do come up against is the cost, I suppose. And we'll talk to Lavita in a second. Lavita, we'll come into you. She's on the phone there. But I did want to make a point that one of the situations that we have here in Dubai is great competition. We've got lots of schools opening. This is a tactic that I guess some schools employ, probably unjustly, probably not overly ethically. So if you hear that, Jenny, somebody saying, if you don't put your child with us, they may fail down the road because academically they're not ready. That's alarm bells should be going.
Absolutely, that's a great big red light.
Right, yeah. Okay.
No question.
Lavita is on the phone. Lavita, you had your child in a nursery you changed because the fees at school level were pretty much the same. Is that right?
The fees at the nursery were cheaper and they had better hours, actually, because I finished working in the afternoon and we could pick up both the kids at the same time. And FS1 pickup was a couple of hours earlier at the school. And I asked them if I could join in FS2 and they said, sorry, but we can't guarantee your place if you don't put them in FS1. So sort of didn't really have a choice because I didn't want the kids in two different schools.
Okay, and what did they say to you? Don't say which school it was, but what did they say to you?
He said, if you don't take this place in FS1, we can't guarantee you a place in FS2.
And is it a particularly busy school, Lavita? Is it a well-populated school? And you were very keen. You had two children in there.
Yes.
Okay.
So I had one in another year, and most people don't want to do two different schools.
That makes a lot of sense. Was there no sibling policy in place that if you have one child in the school, then you would probably have more right to a position in the school?
Yes, but they said we can't guarantee it because it's in demand.
So okay, which seems reasonable, but there were no adverse tactics being employed. They just said we're not really sure that we would be able to offer a place.
Yeah, that's what they said, but I couldn't risk it.
No, fair enough. And as a parent, you can't. Well, look, appreciate your thoughts. Thanks for calling, Lavita.
Yeah.
Okay, well, reasonably positive there. And that's something we talked about off air, Fiona, a few moments ago. Yeah. I mean, it used to be the case, didn't it, that schools would say, we can't absolutely ensure you a place. It was perhaps at a different time a few years ago. There were less schools. You can understand that.
I think there's certainly far more choice for parents, that they don't need to feel pressurised and they can make the right decisions for their family in this environment. But in that particular case, in fairness to the school in question, whoever it might be, it possibly is true that if if their enrolment numbers are such and positive that, look, if you're not here in FS1, I cannot guarantee you a place in FS2. That might be the case in some oversubscribed schools. But with so many new schools in the market and so many different schools on the market, I think there's greater choice that families have different types of decisions.
And that child was still allowed then to join at a reasonable age.
Absolutely.
He wasn't, or she wasn't, pressurised into joining a term or so earlier just because...
It was a positive story,
exactly,
there, wasn't it? It was a generally positive story. Here's a quick question. I'll put it to you, Carissa, Jenny. Is it okay psychologically to put a child in French or any other language other than English for the first couple of years, let's say until grade 2 or 3 or even 5, and then move them to another curriculum like the British curriculum without any effects on the child's self-confidence? I mean, my guess from there is you've got a bilingual child. That's got to be a bonus, hasn't it? Carissa, what do you think?
Yeah, bilingualism is something that comes up a lot. And my suggestion to all my parents would always be to speak your mother tongue at home and then to enroll your child in the school of your choice and have them exposed to as many languages as they can be, because it can only be beneficial for them to speak French and Arabic and English and different languages.
Jenny, would you agree with that?
Absolutely, yeah. It is the time to learn languages. How I wish that I spoke two languages, because I have tried my best to learn Spanish for many years now and it's just not happening.
I know some great words in Spanish and Arabic.
I'm sure you do, yeah.
I can share them off air later. We're over time, unfortunately. Jenny Mullen is from Which School Advisor. Nice to see you.
Thank you very much.
Carissa Valentin from Dutoit. That's Hummingbird Preschool DIFC. I've had trouble with the word, but I'm trying. Carissa, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
And also Fiona Cotton back with us, Chief Academic Officer, Principal at Heartland International. Fiona, thank you.
Thank you again.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.